Hello. Welcome to our Spring Inner Lodge Symposium, sponsored by the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. This year we are being assisted by associates from the United Lodge of Theosophists in San Diego, California, New York City, and London, Canada. Our theme for this year's symposium is in harmony with the theme of International Earth Day this year, Restoring the Earth. And today we're going to look at that issue from a theosophical perspective. Our symposium is of three parts. Part one, we'll look at the Earth in crisis, present and past. Part two, the deep and hidden ecology of the Earth. Part three, restore the Earth, elevate humanity. Our symposium will consist of a few objectives. First, we will direct issues and try to ask questions such as, is our Earth in crisis? Are we responsible? What can we do to restore the Earth? And from a theosophical perspective, we'll look at how can we use theosophy in this issue? Why must we use theosophy now? And when can we use it? A crisis is a definite time of harm and danger, and usually requires some definite decisions that need to be made, some changes that need to be made in order to resolve the crisis. Now, science recognizes that the Earth is in a state of accelerating rapid change that is disrupting the environment, climate, weather, and kingdoms of nature to catastrophic proportions. Both science and theosophy recognize that these phenomena are natural cycles, but recently scientists have observed that the cycles are much more accelerating and extreme than in the past and seem to be directly linked to and appear to be caused by human activities. Now, if there is a crisis in nature that we're going through at this time, then there should be disturbances in the various kingdoms of nature and the elements of nature. Science recognizes the mineral, vegetable, animal, and human kingdom. To add to this, theosophy says that there are three kingdoms below the mineral kingdom, the so-called elemental kingdoms, and we'll learn more about this aspect in a later presentation. The elements of nature refer to the mineral kingdom, the kingdom of the elements of science. The ancients spoke of elements of nature. They had the air, water, fire, earth, but this use of the word element is much more involved and deep than the mere physical expression of the elements of science. So when speaking of disturbances of the air element, we might expect to see global warming and climate change, tornadoes, hurricanes. If there was a crisis in the fire element, we would see volcanoes, earthquakes. A crisis disruption in the water element would be manifested by floods, and a crisis in the earth element would be manifested by changing land mass. Now, in addition to crises in the mineral kingdom, crises in the plant and animal kingdom would be seen by extinction of plant and animal species at a much greater rate. Also, we would expect the human signs, the human kingdom of showing signs of being in crisis, interconnected with these crises in nature. So as the kingdoms of nature, the elements of nature are interdependent and react one another, we would expect to see catastrophes of the air, water, fire, and earth as given, interacting with one another and with the extinction events and the crises affecting the human kingdom. So before looking at this issue of, is the Earth in crisis presently, we want to get some definitions to consider. Weather refers to local atmospheric conditions occurring over short periods of time, as manifested by rain, snow, clouds, wind, storms. Now, if we expand that view to include regional and global averages of temperature, humidity, and rainfall patterns over expanded periods of time, over years and decades, we're referring to climate. Global warming, then, is the long-term heating of the Earth's climate, measured by an increase in the Earth's global surface temperature. And climate change is the long-term change in average weather patterns of local, regional, and global climates produced by changes in the Earth's global surface temperature. So that we are seeing changes in the Earth's global surface temperature first, producing regional and global changes in climates over a period of time, and showing long-term changes in the average weather patterns occurring locally. So NASA has been monitoring the Earth pretty regularly now for a number of years, and we'll take a look at that. So at any one time, the Earth is being observed from space by orbiting satellites, taking its so-called vital signs. And here we see one such sign is the air temperature, varying according to different regions of the globe. Carbon dioxide levels, varying according to different regions of the globe, where there is more industrial use. Carbon monoxide also varying according to higher industrial and population centers. Also, the sea levels are monitored, and these change relating to different portions of the globe and also have their natural cycles, which can be measured. Soil moisture, reflecting of precipitation, rains, snow, flooding, storms, also varies according to time and various regions of the Earth. Ozone has its natural cycle and varies also according to regions of the Earth. Water vapor, natural occurring water droplets in the air, can also varies from time to time and across space. Now, a very interesting observation are the gravity fields that differ in different portions of the globe. Gravity also is related to electromagnetic fields, as we will see, and is also directly related to weather patterns. Now, interesting, when this is viewed over a period of time, we see that there's a periodic increase and decrease in these gravity field centers in different parts of the globe. So observing these changes over time, decades, scientists do observe some interesting phenomena that are relevant to climate change. First of all, here we have depicted from observations beginning in 1979, the annual Arctic sea ice minimum around midsummer. Of course, in the winter, this area would extend to a much larger area. But as we move across time up until the present time, we see that annual Arctic sea ice minimum is shrinking more and more. Here we have it up to 2020. And it is projected at that current rate of accelerating decrease in ice minimum, that by the end of the 21st century, this Arctic sea ice will completely disappear. And what is going on here in the Arctic sea ice is also being echoed in Greenland and the Antarctica. So where is all this melted ice going? And of course, here we have satellite depictions and summaries of changes in the sea level over a period of time. We have here the southern and southeast coasts of the United States and associated high population areas. And as we move across time, we see that the sea levels are rising along the coasts. And out here, we would have around the end of the 21st century, and we would see major population areas underwater. And as we move out a few hundred more years from continuous rate of sea level rise, reduce the melting, we see that extensive portions of the coastal areas and major population centers are submerged. So this, of course, creates alarm. Now, what seems to be related to this is, over a period of time, is the changes in global temperature we spoke about. So these temperatures were started to be measured in 1884, around the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And here we have 1884, in the period of William Q. Judge and H.P. Blavatsky, we see various centers of temperature difference, the yellow, orange, red being much higher temperatures over different portions of the globe. And as we progressively move slowly through the years, we see these areas expanding, not only in area, but also in intensity of heat. And here we are at the middle of the 20th century and moving forward, still not much change until we get until the beginning of the 21st century, and now look at the rapid acceleration in areas of increased global warming and the intensity of the heat, especially of those areas in the Arctic and Greenland. So is there any consistent pattern that can be observed over this period of time, especially in the last 20 years? And so here we have levels of CO2 in the atmosphere, and what can only account for these sudden increases in CO2 levels at an accelerated rate is from human, industrial, and other sources, but definitely human activity. So look what happens here as we move across time here, first 10 years of the century, and now in the last 10 years, we see a dramatic increase in the intensity and concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So, current trends observed by scientists to the present. An increase in Earth's global average surface temperature by 2.12 degrees Fahrenheit since the late 19th century. The last 7 years have been the warmest, as we saw. 2016, 2020 were the warmest on record since these observations began to be recorded by scientists. Some of the physical indicators of the phenomenon of global warming, the warming of this ocean surface temperature, shrinking ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica, also decrease in the Arctic sea ice, as we've seen. But even over land, glacial retreat and decreased in the spring snow cover in the northern hemisphere, resulting in increased rate in the sea rise levels. Increasing record high temperatures over the land, increasing air temperature expressed as more heat waves, intense rainfall events, increased spread of insects, pests, tropical diseases spreading north. These are the current trends. Now, if scientists project this out over the remaining portion of the 21st century, what do they expect to see? Increasing frequency of severity of category 4 and 5 hurricanes, more intense heat waves, wildfires, droughts, floods, precipitation, cloud cover, vegetation cover, floods and storms. So temperatures will continue to rise, increase in a frost-free and growing season, more droughts, heat waves, stronger hurricanes, ice-free Arctic, as we spoke about, and more coastal flooding from rising sea levels. in addition to the disturbances of the mineral kingdom, and we spoke about the disturbances and crises affecting the plant and animal species reflected in extinction events, there is an alarming decline in biodiversity leading to the current mass extinction. What affects one species affects many. And these extinction events and disturbances are seen on all the continents on the globe. Animals are going extinct 100 to 1,000 times faster than the normal extinction rate, which is about 10 to 25 species a year. The current extinction rate threatens up to 1 million species of plants and animals. 37,000 animal species are currently on the critically endangered list. And aside to this, we did want to highlight that nearly half of all the known animals on Earth are parasites, species which live in or on a host and take something from that host. They are not necessarily harmful to the hosts. As a matter of fact, they play a very crucial role in keeping populations in check and helping to feed species. Of the 42 major branches on the tree of life, 31 are parasites, and yet 1/10 of the known parasites are already doomed to extinction in the next 50 years due to climate change, loss of their hosts, and human eradication. And these extinction of plant and animal species acceleration rates are directly related to five major human activities: destruction of the habitat of species due to human-induced climate change, human trading by shipping and air travel, introducing invasive and dangerous species into an environment that is not used to these species, pollution of the air and water, human overpopulation resulting in over-harvesting of species also contributes to their extinction. So what are the causes of the global warming and climate change that we see at this time? Well, there are natural causes which have their cycle. There's an internal variability of cyclical ocean patterns. We're familiar with El Niño, which is a cycle lasting about 3 to 7 years in which the water temperature of the southwestern coast and the Pacific changes, resulting in temperature changes and weather pattern changes. La Niña is the periodic cyclical changes of the water temperature in the Pacific where they become more cool over a 3 to 7 year period. But there are variations in the water temperature and the oceans that can last decades as well and have their climate effect. There are external forcings that have a cyclical effect on climate change, volcanic activity, changes in the sun's energy output, variations in the Earth's orbit. But these changes have not varied that much to account for the rapid increase in global warming and climate change we've seen over the last decade. There are greenhouse gases that also naturally produce the phenomenon of global warming, which is necessary to life on this planet. We have volcanic eruptions accounting for about 2% of the CO2 in the atmosphere. Respiration produced CO2 that also traps heat. So looking then at the greenhouse effect here, okay, well, we don't have it available for us right now, but the greenhouse effect, there's this atmosphere around the Earth, and about 50% of the Earth, heat and light from the sun gets through to the Earth, it's absorbed by the Earth and reflected back into the atmosphere. About 90% of that is then returned to the surface of the Earth, producing the global warming. Now, said there's a certain amount of natural greenhouse effect produced by water vapor and CO2 in the atmosphere, but also as a result of burning of oil and coal, deforestation, we see tremendous increases in the amount of CO2, nitrous oxide, methane from decomposition of landfill waste, industrial origin of synthetic compounds, soil cultivation and fertilizer practices also contributes to the greenhouse effect. Methane is not as common a greenhouse gas, but is definitely more potent than CO2 in producing the phenomenon. Of course, the chlorofluorocarbons compounds, these produced by industrial origin of, are not only affecting the greenhouse effect, but also destroy the ozone layer. Now, there seems to be a third factor that affects the rising CO2 levels in global warming we've seen recently, and that is there's a very high correlation observed by science between decreasing Earth's magnetic fields, increasing CO2 levels, and increasing global temperature in the last 40 years. So scientists have observed that in the same time that there's this increasing CO2 and global temperature, there's also a decrease in the Earth's magnetic field. Now, although it is not known why there are shifts in the average Earth's magnetic field intensity, these relatively rapid decreases and increases of the magnetic field are related to periods of warming and cooling and glacier formation. So this change, this periodicity in the Earth's magnetic field, is believed by science to be coupled to short and long-term alterations in solar activity, as we will see, and the presence of cosmic dust in the Earth's atmosphere, together working to produce these periods of global warming and climate change. Now, from the perspective of theosophy, when we speak of Earth's magnetism, there is no phenomena in nature entirely unconnected with either magnetism or electricity. The phenomena of the Earth's magnetism and the atmospheric electricity are due to the ever-changing potential of the Earth. The Earth itself is a magnet and has magnetic electric phenomena associated. The factors of the ever-changing potential of the Earth do relate to the rotation of the Earth, the annual orbital motion of the Earth around the sun, successive cooling and heating of air, wind, storms, clouds, and rain, weather patterns. But the point here is that the changes in the Earth's magnetism is recognized by theosophy as to produce changes in weather. Atmospheric changes and disturbances are due to the combined magnetism of the Earth and the sun, as we will see. So has science been able to gather any evidence that changes in the magnetic field can contribute to the rising CO2 levels? So there is a Earth strength magnetic field that can vary, and it can have climatically relevant properties on seawater. So seawater naturally has a certain amount of carbon dioxide absorbed in it from respiration of sea creatures, as well as from absorption of CO2 from the atmosphere. But when the electromagnetic field is lowered, the CO2 solubility is also lowered. In other words, there is more release, there's less solubility, so there's more release of CO2 in the seawater into the atmosphere. So such that a 1% reduction in the magnetic field may release 10 times more CO2 from the surface ocean than is emitted from the activity of volcanoes. But together, volcanoes and changes in the Earth's magnetic field don't account for the majority of the CO2 buildup that is there. It is more related to human activity. So in recent decades, science has also observed that there seem to be changes in the upper atmosphere above 100 kilometers, that there's been a cooling in recent decades. And it's not only due to the change in greenhouse gas emissions, more greenhouse gases, less heat that can get into the upper atmosphere, but also related to shifts in the Earth's magnetic field. Long-term variations in that field, as well as connected with the sun cycles. So they've observed that these long-term shifts in the Earth's magnetic field play a significant role in the thermal qualities of the atmosphere and climate, particularly in the northern and southern poles. Long-term changes in the electrical quality and density of the atmosphere are affected by CO2 and the Earth magnetic field. So this is very interesting scientific conclusions that are also taught from a theosophical perspective. So in the point of view of theosophy, not only is the Earth have magnetic qualities, but the sun itself is a gigantic ball of electromagnetic forces. And the magnetic radiations of the sun are constantly fluctuating and relate to the variety and number of its sunspots. And we know, and scientists observe, that there's an 11-year cycle related to the sunspot activity and a 11-year variation of magnetic radiation. But the amount of variation coming from the sun in terms of magnetism does not account for the tremendous rise in the CO2 or the global warming that we see in the last few decades. Now, another phenomena that is being studied by science and also is interesting from a theosophical perspective is that of cosmic dust. So both science and theosophy recognize that the Earth passes through regions of space in which there are more or less masses of meteoric dust. So this meteoric dust are like clouds of matter that has electromagnetic qualities, elements of metals that are affected and accumulated by the Earth as it passes through these regions. In fact, it's these clouds of meteoric dust in space that make us so difficult for us to see of the many, many stars that are possible to be seen. And fortunately with the radio telescopes that are not affected by these meteoric clouds, we have much greater views and resolution of the stars and that are available to us to see. So as the Earth moves around the sun, it comes in contact with these different regions of meteoric dust. The sun itself is moving in a circle, so to speak, around the solar system, and so entering different areas of meteoric dust concentration. So there are times when the Earth's atmosphere is filled with magnetic meteoric dust, which does not even belong to our solar system. The effect of the Earth's magnetism on the magnetic qualities of dust is such that it keeps these dust clouds or this dust as it enters our atmosphere in a cohesion, in a mass. And so as it does attract this meteoric dust, it has a direct influence on the changes of temperature producing heat and cold climates. How is this done? So during periods where there is more cosmic dust in our atmosphere, it produces an expansion of the Earth's atmosphere, almost like an expansion of the effect of the gas effect on the atmosphere, such as we see a heating up of the atmosphere and the globe. This is similar to what occurred in the Carboniferous periods when the average global temperature was 68 degrees compared to 57 degrees in 2020. When there's less cosmic dust and the Earth's atmosphere seems to contract, like there's less greenhouse gas coverage and there's less of this cosmic dust coverage in the atmosphere, as a result, more heat can release into space and we have these glacial periods. So cosmic dust does seem to be a new phenomenon, at least observed by scientists, its relationship to the climate changes and heating up of the atmosphere. But it is something that has been recognized for a long period of time from a theosophical perspective. So this brings us to the end of our presentation this morning, relating to answering the question, is the Earth in crisis now? We'll take a break for a few minutes, and then our second presenter will examine the question of the Earth being in crisis in the past. And we'll see that this phenomenon is not a new or unique one, but the Earth has been through similar such crises in the past. So we'll stop here and look forward to seeing you again in a few minutes.